You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
On Tuesday, the Treasury announced some unemployment figures based on modelling from different scenarios relating to the COVID-19 pandemic and our subsequent dahui. The scenarios show that unemployment can be kept below 10% and return to 5% in 2021 with additional government support. Work is underway on further fiscal support in the area. Without additional support, unemployment could have hit 13.5% under scenario 1, and that is 4 weeks in level 4, while scenarios requiring more time in level 4 showed a peak of 17.5% to 26% unemployment. New Zealand's underlying strength means the economy can bounce back to be $70 billion larger by 2024 than in 2019. That was also included in the modelling. So they take into account various conditions like the length of each period at different lockdown alert levels and how much additional stimulus money the government puts into the economy and the effect COVID-19 has on the global economy. Basically, these are the best options and the worst options we have to deal with, and the best still being an increase in unemployment to just under 10%. Some commentators have pointed out this number is already a reality for Māori. So what does this all mean, and what effect will COVID-19 have on the economic system in general? To get some idea, I rang Rod Oram, and we started off by talking about this, but ended up talking about capitalism more generally.
It's very important to emphasise, indeed as the Finance Minister and others are doing, that these aren't forecasts. Their scenarios. They are what ifs. So if global growth contracts by X percent and lockdown at level 4 is for X months and level 3 is Y months, what is the economic impact of that? So it's strictly modelling, it's not forecasting. But what that does show is that the longer a tight lockdown is in place, the bigger the impact. So for example, if an alert level 4 reduces economic output by about 40% and level 3 by about 25% and level 2 by about 10 or 15% from the normal. And then the longer it goes on at that level, obviously the bigger the impact. So in these five scenarios, they've got the Treasury's come up with various lengths at which there's a level 4 lockdown. So the first scenario is 1 month level 4, which we know we've certainly in for that much, 1 month at level 3. But then interestingly, 10 months at level 1 or 2. So in other words, there is still an economic impact, all going well, that persists for some time. And then the other factor is, and this is the fifth scenario, if the lockdown and how we handled things in New Zealand went pretty well, but it dragged out much longer out in the global economy, what would be the impact then? And there, it looks as though they're suggesting that worse than expected for the world was coming back from about 3% global growth, which was the basis of government forecasts back last December, to negative 3 or 4% global, but going on for quite a long time. So that's the basic framework there. So that's why there are very big ranges in terms of how high unemployment goes, how much economic activity is hit. But one last point, which is a really important one, it also analyzes those scenarios against the support package now versus doubling up that money. So what happens if the government put $40 billion into the economy, not just $20 billion, how would that ease the impact? And that significantly reduces the unemployment level in all of those scenarios. So I think the implicit message there, actually it's a probably explicit message, is that the government is not done yet.
in terms of borrowing?
Not necessarily borrowing, because the Reserve Bank can also play roles in this as well. But primarily from the government's point of view, borrowing. But again, there's an important point there that the current level of government programs announced, which will increase borrowing, would push our government net debt as a percentage of economic activity up from about 15 or 16%, as memory serves now, to about 50%. But 50% is a whole lot lower than many other developed countries are already at before they got into the COVID crisis. So in other words, even just on a straight borrowing level, we went into this much better prepared or in a much better position than other countries. And therefore, we can afford for the government to do significantly more borrowing than it's already planning to do. Another calculation they made was, given these scenarios, what's the cumulative impact of our nominal gross domestic product 5 years from now? And under none of these, and that was as far as they were going in modeling terms, and even in the best case scenario, we still haven't got back to where GDP would have been if there was no COVID crisis in 5 years' time, right, even under the most benign scenario, and under the most, and that with the shortfall there would be about $120 billion cumulatively. And the most extreme was the third scenario, which is the longest impact, but with no new government money, and there'd be a cumulative shortfall in GDP of about $270 billion. That's a useful guide to how this might work out, but it shouldn't be too alarming because over that period, I'm trying to do a rough calculation, it is a noticeable drop in cumulative level of economic activity over that period of time, but it's the shorter term shocks which are the more important ones to focus on.
Mm. So in terms of, I guess, your responses to this, or just even more generally, what do you think, how are you feeling at this point in terms of what we're going to be looking at for the next couple of years?
This isn't going to be a helpful answer, in that I don't think anybody's got much of an idea of what's going to happen, because there are just so many factors in play, and we've just kind of like never been here before. So there's nothing in the past is much of a guide to the present and the near-term future. So, for example, there is a real possibility, I'm not yet saying a probability, that the level of global economic activity this year might fall as much as 15%, which was the same as the fall in global GDP in the 3 years it took to get from the stock market crash in 1929 to the bottom of economic activity. In fact, here in New Zealand, we actually fell 17% over that period. But this is very different this time because a very big contributing factor there was a terrible breakdown in trade relations, huge tariffs, that kind of stuff, and being imposed, but also money supply contracted quite phenomenally. So, for example, just in the US, it contracted by about a third because banks just were too scared to lend. Quite a few of them went bust. And so there was just plain less money going around in the economy. That is not, now we're facing the completely opposite situation. The level of stimulus that governments have committed so far is already up to about 25% of global GDP and heading higher. So there isn't a shortage of money and stimulus there, which makes conditions now very different from the Great Depression. I still think what's my basic message here? It's that we've still got to be calm, careful, strategic, creative through all this to make the best decisions we can with the knowledge we have at a given time, but then also to be adjusting those positions as quickly as we can when we see new needs or changing needs, both in policy and economic terms.
Can we talk, like, I guess, a bit more generally around capitalism, I guess, as the economic system? So a couple of things. somebody has written the wage subsidy scheme, for example, which has meant that a range of people have been able to continue paying their rent and feed themselves. Also, you know, businesses been able to keep workers on, all of that sort of thing. But essentially, it also, somebody has written, it provides breathing room to carry on exploiting labour once the lockdown is over. So it sort of just, you know, pauses everything, continues the system so that it can kind of snap back into place at the end without necessarily dealing with the issues that this whole pandemic has raised.
There is an enormous contest, an enormous push and pull going on here between the forces, I would argue, for good, which is trying to significantly change systems and deal with these long-standing issues, versus those forces that are selfishly or otherwise trying to maintain an existing system that suited them very well. And that's going to be a phenomenal contest playing out over coming years. But one of the things that strikes me as I've been talking to lots of business people over the last month is how so many of them are absolutely certain that the kind of more normal place we get to eventually will look quite changed from the one we left a month or so ago. They are trying to make decisions that keep their businesses going now, but trying to see what's positive in that, how they can make decisions now that help them build that different future. And I find that in those people, you know, very genuine commitment. So I am thus hoping for and expecting better. I don't know quite, I have no idea what better really means. I mean, I've got my own sort of wish list of that, but how that actually turns out, I can't possibly forecast. But I think we've got to all keep each other very optimistic and honest and focused on those issues, rather than just saying, oh, it's all too hard, we'll just try and patch things up and carry on as we were.
Can I just go back with some history now? So Al Jazeera posted an article talking about the way that the bubonic plague actually changed the economic system by radically reducing the number of workers. It gave the survivors increased bargaining power, which soon translated into new concepts of liberty among the population of medieval cities, it says. And then it also goes to read that in turn started a process of economic change that brought an end to the feudal system and some argue triggered the rise of capitalism. So could the COVID-19 pandemic mean the end of capitalism, for example?
I know that it's changing capitalism in some ways for the better. We're already seeing that. But I'm sure it won't be the end of it. Compared with sort of medieval bubonic plagues over quite a long period of time, successive plagues, they were, so many people died. I mean, it was sort of 30% or 40% of populations. That's why you had a severe labor shortage, and that's why the sort of things they've identified came about. But as time went on, I'm talking centuries now, the power of those with capital, those with capacity, economic and political and social and every other way, to bend the system to their advantage increased, which is why we've ended up with high inequality now. The last time inequality sort of bottomed out a bit was after the Second World War, but it's pretty much gone in one direction since then, which is upwards. And what's going on now is in nowhere near as big as a completely cataclysmic human and economic and political upheaval as we were talking about in plague times 600-700 years ago.
So somebody else has pointed out that the number of times coming back home, I suppose, and talking about this, the Treasury's report today, the number of times that the New Zealand Treasury mentions the impact on Māori is precisely zero. So they're, I guess, not forecasting, like you say, but the modelling, looking at what we know previously, the unemployment range of 8.3% to 24.9% means a Māori unemployment range anywhere between 17 and 50%. Would you have anything to say about that?
I have no idea about the specifics, but the basic principle that those people who are disadvantaged now will be more disadvantaged than others through this is true, even if there is government programs, new ones, carefully focused ones, powerful ones, and can help minimize that. But I still think a disproportional amount of impact will be on those people. And as far as I can see from looking at Treasury's work, they didn't then take their forecast down to that level. They were talking about the economy as a whole, but I'd be very clear in my own mind that those who are the worst off now are going to suffer disproportionately more, however good the government programs are. And there is already some things from the government which is trying to ameliorate those. We need more of that. There is still going to be disproportionate damage.
Is there anything else you'd like to add today, Rod?
It's really hard through all of this as the news keeps coming at you to keep a sense of what's possible rather than just kind of giving up. 11, 12 years ago during the global financial crisis, I quite quickly got to a point of a sort of unperturbability in a sense. You know, these extraordinary things were happening and I didn't sort of go, oh my goodness, how on earth could that possibly have happened? And then a few days later it became apparent what the connections were that made that happen. So as each thing unfolded, I took it very seriously. But just sort of trying to stay relatively calm in the face of it. It's harder now because so much more, our whole, the global financial crisis was largely about a financial system and its potential failure on the impact of, the physical economy and all of society. But this impact is now on all of society and all of the physical economy. So this is a very bigger, more fraught, more difficult situation. And I guess it's really important that we all just try to work out how we keep making progress on this. It's a very simple analogy I often use is that if you're on a little boat and you're being carried down a river by the flow of the river, all you've got to do is row just half a knot faster than the current, and you can pick which way you're going to go in the river. You can get round the corners, you can get round the rocks. But if you just let the current carry you away, it will dump you where it dumps you. So it's really important that, however difficult it is, we just keep trying to make some headway with these currents and just keep slightly ahead of them so we've got a bit more steerage way so we can pick where we end up.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.